Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the SCCE and HCCA. I'm coming to you today from Las Vegas, Nevada, and I'm here at the 2018 Compliance Institute. Joining me is Cindy Mattson, who is the Senior Executive Director of Compliance for Sanford Health. She's talking at the conference on three keys to rock your auditing and monitoring plan. And Cindy, first of all, thanks a lot for joining us and being a part of the meeting.
Thanks, Adam. I'm glad to be here and enjoying the conference so far.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. So rock, audit, and monitoring don't usually go together, so I appreciate you bringing some enthusiasm to the prospect. Let me start with a basic question. Is it reasonable to try and audit all the elements of a program annually, or is it better for a compliance officer to think about spreading that out over several years?
Well, I would be envious of a compliance officer who would quickly say, yes, we can do all of those things every year. In talking with compliance officers and with my own experiences, generally you don't have unlimited resources. So the idea that you can cover every nook and cranny of your program and then not only cover it, but actually take action and improve areas where you've seen a need for that. Usually folks don't have that many resources at their disposal.
Yeah, it's tough, I can see. I mean, not just the seven elements, but all the detailed parts. It certainly makes sense. So how do you decide where to start and how often to edit different parts?
Well, I think the basic rule for most compliance officers is you really do have to identify the scope of your program. In other words, what elements of risk are you addressing with your compliance program? And then assessing those risks on a periodic time frame, usually annually at least. Sometimes with the rapid pace of emerging risks now, we are even doing that more frequently. But I think you have to look at a solid risk assessment and if there are new and emerging risks, and what your scope really is, as well as any audit history. What have you done more recently, and do you have some follow-up things that you're going to continue to have to pursue in the next cycle?
So basically use as a roadmap your risk assessment, where you've gone wrong in the past to sort of put to the top of the list, and then what you've audited recently lower down.
Correct.
So what's the role of internal audit and other departments, for that matter, in conducting an audit of your compliance program? Do you think they're good, effective partners to turn to?
I think they really, if you do have both resources, you know, in your organization, that they definitely have to collaborate and be good partners. They both have independent functions that are there to really address risk within the organization. Interestingly, in the session that we did a show of hands about how many organizations had both an internal audit function and a separate compliance function. And it was about a 50-50 show of hands. So there are many large organizations do also have the internal audit functions, but often there may not be that resource outside of compliance. So it I think is a bigger issue for some organizations than other, but others, again, I think if you look at it from a collaborative standpoint, really, if you work together, that just means you have more resources to address risk for your organization. In general, I think internal audit that I've experienced, they're more focused on governance risks, strategic, financial types of areas, and often then the compliance program is focused more on regulatory compliance auditing, as well as any investigative types of audits that may occur because of hotline or other reported concerns. So I think it's important to work together and yet kind of scope out what type of work each part of your organization is going to be doing.
So building off of something you just said, that a lot of times internal audit isn't as familiar with legal and regulatory compliance, what are some of the things that a compliance officer should do to help get them up to speed and understand exactly what the scope is that you're looking for in terms of their ability to help with a auditing and monitoring plan?
Well, I think one of the things we talked about in our session really related to a collaborative process in general. So aside from internal audit, you probably have operations and other folks that you need to bring to the table in order to really help everyone understand what the risk is and how you're going to address that, either through education or audit, and then who is the owner for those types of activities. So I think some of the audit activity does tend to land in one bucket or the other because of the expertise and the type of staff that you employ. If you mainly have financial auditors or folks on with that type of experience in your internal audit, it would be difficult for them to audit a billing issue or a documentation issue in a clinical setting. So if you have an RN on one team or the other, you know, that makes you more able to address audits of a certain type. So I think that makes a difference.
It's interesting. It's sort of the idea of don't look at other sort of silos that can help, but see how you can build a cross functional team.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the approaches and tools you found work best in conducting an audit?
One of the things, again, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but the collaboration piece has been real important to us. One of the things that we've learned is if you involve other areas in your audit preparation, that your outcome is much better, and actually the whole audit process can go much more smoothly. I think everyone is more open to audit process and to audit outcome if they feel informed along the way. So probably the biggest tip is that collaboration and communication. I think the other things that are important is when you have stakeholders in the room, you really can scope out the issue a little bit better. And what we've found is sometimes audits can wander if you don't have a really clear scope and a really clear expectations of what the findings are when you complete the audit. Maybe auditors can take in, you know, there's a CMS requirement, and they'll base an audit tool off of one requirement. By bringing in other stakeholders, if there's a related accreditation requirement or maybe a clinical practice, as you go through the audit process, that helps you better really look at the entire process for your organization, and maybe not just do you have the right code assigned to the outcome. So there's definitely benefits.
It's interesting. I mean, it's one of those things that sounds ridiculously basic, which is make sure people understand what they're auditing for. But by the same token, it's one of those things where it's easy for somebody to have the wrong assumption of what you're looking for, or, you know, if they're less familiar with what the real matter is and what the outcome you're looking for is, they may come in with a different set and be looking for the wrong thing all the time. So we talked just now about a mistake that's one can make. Are there any other easy, sort of obvious after the fact mistakes or traps that you see people falling into when trying to audit and monitor their program?
I think that question kind of tails on to the one we just talked about. What we found occasionally, if you don't understand the source documents that you're going to be using, you can sometimes be led astray right at the outset of the audit. In other words, if you're going to run some type of a data run or a report, maybe from your analytics team, we started taking real steps to verify that the data we were getting met the expectations. In other words, if our expectation is we maybe do 100 services a year and we get a report that says we only did 20 services a year or a month or whatever that time frame would be, that would stop us a little bit to say, now this doesn't make mistake or this doesn't make sense. Have we lost data in the process? And I think the other thing that has happened or happened initially when we're auditing in our EMR is that as auditors, you have a certain view into an EMR, whether that's the coding side, the billing side, the clinical documentation, that direct providers, care providers, don't see. And so where we think a piece of data might be is not where it is. And so unfortunately, early on, we would get to the end of the audit and have audit findings that say, you know, we were missing a bunch of information, and really we didn't know exactly where to locate that. So it kind of goes back to getting folks at the table. So I think the other thing we touched on are those what we would call incidental findings. So when you identify your scope, we really want to finish that audit. So an example of what I might be talking about is if you go in expecting to document drug wastage and you find out you have a problem with not having complete orders. you know, do you drop everything you're doing and go back and address the orders issue, or do you continue on with the audit with the scope that you had and report that out? And our answer is we would do both. Mm-hmm. And not let the incidental findings kind of derail the entire audit. Certainly you want to address any finding you have, whether it was in the original scope or not. So I think the last big tip about easy mistakes has to do with follow-up. And one of the things that we are working on is, when you talk about auditing your program, is looking at auditing our audit process. Mm. In other words, do we have complete findings? Are there corrective action plans when there are findings, and were they followed up on? And did the compliance office retain all of that documentation to complete the cycle? So those are things that I think you take for granted, and retrospectively, when you go back and look, you might find you've made a mistake in some of that record keeping. So that's an area that we've been focusing on.
Well, it sounds definitely like an area worth focusing on. One final question. Let's say you've done an audit in an area. It's terrific, right? You feel good about things. What's the best next step at that point? I mean, it's easy at that point to say, forget about it for a period of time, because we're good there. You know, is that the time where you sit down and say, okay, this is, we got to make sure we go back 2 years, 3 years from now, or a year? What's your advice there?
My advice is that your findings on a previous audit is part of that risk assessment. And again, you're going to go back to that risk assessment every cycle or every year, whatever that is. And having a good audit outcome certainly affects that risk assessment, meaning it's one of the factors that lowers the risk. But there may be other factors. For instance, obviously in healthcare, 340B payments. Usually the financial risk in those payments is so huge for organizations that even if you've had a good audit outcome, that the problem or the likelihood or the severity of any compliance failure there is so high, you may want to continue to have something on your audit plan for year to year, even though you've had a good outcome previously.
So continued vigilance, no matter how good the results may be. And actually, I have to say, as you were saying that, I was thinking of Dan Levitin's comments about dynamic compliance, which seems to suggest that what's good for today may not be good for tomorrow.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, you know, information and technology changes so rapidly in organizations. And, you know, simple changes can create a system failure along the road. So it maybe is the compliance officer's paranoia a little bit that when is it ever good enough? And I think it's really important to keep the risk and the size of that risk front and center, so that you don't, just because you were good 2 years ago, you don't lose sight of something that is really important to your organization.
Well, Cindy, thanks a lot for sharing the insights on this podcast. Thanks for taking the time to speak at the meeting. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen today. I'm Adam Turteltaub from HCCA and SCCE saying I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspectives.